Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we'll try that again. Welcome to www.transparency.help, our live talk show about life's issues that keep us in all kinds of wounds, weaknesses, and worries. My name is Evinda Leppins, and I am thrilled to be with you today. Love the form of accountability. And then, of course, with me is Steve, whom I would not do it without. How are you?
I'm good.
How was your weekend?
We have a small group, and it was really cool.
Cause Bible study group, you mean?
Bible study from the church. And they ask us as a small group once a semester to do some kind of outreach. Now, Gail and I make a point to go feed the homeless randomly, take lunches down, and drag a wagon. Well,
drag a wagon, I love that.
So there were three families in the group that went, others that went with us, and two of them had three kids, like 5, 4, and 6.
Mm.
And the people, we made 30 lunches, and you know, we took oranges and bananas and water, and the homeless people just love the kids being there. I mean, this is a park we go to all the time, and so it just like lit up, you know. And the kids, it was so cool running up to them and giving them their lunches and the
like
water.
Like they have
no fear or shame.
I love it.
Oh my gosh, it was very, very, very cool.
That's so innocent, you know, when you see children who don't know anything about labels and life's issues, if you will, and they just love on them no matter what, and no wonder why. And that could be very healing for the homeless.
Well, and they say that those kids are walking away, and I said, these people don't have any houses. You know, they sleep out here outside, and we need to love them as Jesus loves us, you know, and just sort of to make it a reality of this is the life we are meant to live.
Well, and I think, you know, it's kind of cool to actually think about, because a lot of people I know say, yeah, I want my kids to go so I could teach them how lucky they are, which to me isn't really.
Well, hopefully that's implied in time when we tell them that this is how the real world
lives
in a third world country. They don't have the things you do, and here's a little bit of that.
And so you guys just do that, not with the church or anything, you and Gail, right?
Yes, we will go. Gail and I just go down, you know, and make up. And it depends, you know, it's amazing. There were two extra sandwiches made. We should have put those. We had two people we couldn't give a lunch to.
Really?
And we should have just taken that as God's leading and, you know, just threw an extra two bags together.
Yeah.
We had extra fruit to give them and bananas and kind of thing. But,
30
people. And it was just there. That's quite a bit in one. You know, normally there's not that many, and then we'll go to another park we know that's nearby and finish giving them out. But one park had that many people.
30 people.
Yeah. 30.
You know, I think it's appropriate. We were going to move on to the root of rage and just do the framework for that. But I think, you know, talking about this is very appropriate, because we decided we're just going to give one more week to explaining just a little bit more about the root of despair. Not to mention the fact that I messed up and forgot to tell Jennifer that we were moving on to rage. So we're going to stay on rage, because that's what Facebook and social media.
So if you're rageful about that.
Yeah, if you're rageful about that, we're really sorry. Just let it simmer a little bit longer and we'll get to that. But today we wanted to just actually talk a little bit more about the reality of despair. And, you know, that's a perfect place to start. You go to a park where there's a bunch of homeless people. And
well, I think, you know, hopeless is a lot of things and it's tough. You know, we label those people. I might have shared one Friday afternoon, I got off on an off-ramp near my house, and there was a man standing there, and he and his buddy were part of a construction site that they were paying for them to live there. They're homeless, but they asked them to live there because that made it like security-ish.
Right.
And I asked the man if the next day I could come and bring my children. If he would be there, I'll take him to breakfast so he can share his story with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
How did he get
to
be homeless?
Uh-huh.
And so it was very cool. My daughter got a little panicked. I think they were 9 and 10. And she goes, "You're not going to bring them home, are you?"
Wow.
Because I've been known to do that as well, you know.
Yeah.
And so I said, "No, I'm not going to. We're just going to hear his story." And sad. He came out here and he was from back east and it was warmer out here. He drove his van and had tools, and his van got burned up.
Wow.
With all of his tools. And so he had no place to be except on the street, you know.
See, and I know that I mean, for those of us in the faith, you know, we could say, you know, the cliche, I mean, the verse, which I don't mean to say it's cliche, but it sounds very cliche to someone who's just lost everything, to be able to say, hey, dude, it's all good. You know, God works all things, man. It's going to be okay. And yet, how do you respond? And you know what? The Lord tells us how to respond. You know, you do this to the least of these. You love on them. You know, I was reading in my, I'm reading a book called On Servant Leadership. And you don't come across, you know, the homeless people and say, oh, I'll pray for you and keep on going. Well, you've got to do action.
Well, Peter found in the book of Acts when they were going around that he didn't have any money, but he said to the man, such as I have, I'll give to you. Mm-hmm. And so he prayed with him and shared the gospel with him. And equally, what do we have? What could we take time? But I think we're very judgmental. And of course, I understand. And the reason I had my kids go down and learn that story was because most of us think they're just a bunch of people that take drugs and they solicit money. Mm-hmm. And all they want to do is stay drunk. And that is not true.
No, it's not.
And it's a sad thing of our attitude. These are the people Jesus chose. It's an interesting story if we understand taxation at the time. The taxes put a lot of them on the street. If they couldn't pay their taxes, they would take away their homes and their land, and these people would be out in poverty, if you will. And these are the people that Jesus sought to care for and to love.
Well, and, you know, our home group was actually talking about this very phenomenon. It's a real hard conundrum to understand. You know, unfortunately, society has taught us to be, I don't want to say critical, but to be over careful. And so sure. We judge that person sitting there at the off ramp on the freeway that says homeless, you know, need money, whatever. And we make a quick decision, you know, this person is definitely in the pit of despair. You know, anybody who has to do that, whether they're being honest or not honest, sure. They are definitely in the pit of despair. They have definitely lost all hope, because despair is a loss of hope. But I really agree with the fact that, you know, we tend to make judgment calls.
Right.
And so I believe that we need to be mindful of that and careful of that. It's not up to me to determine what that person does with the dollar I give him or the burrito I give him. You know what I mean?
Well, when the kids were smaller, you know, we took them a lot of different places. We went to the L.A. Mission, and it was like a weekend. We were going to serve that day, and my daughter, and this was before they moved into their huge, brand-new, whatever many years ago that was, facility. And so all the pots and pans that they were cooking with, and you could see, and this is the homeless people and recovering from things, were also responsible to take care of the facility. And so they were cooking, and you could see the pans were black, and they were hanging up. And, of course, you clean them. They're cast iron. And my daughter was there, and we were setting the table, and the help, we were the help that day. We're going to eat before they ate. And she goes, I'm not eating food out of those pans.
Mm.
And I said, great, you can just... we'll eat and you can starve. You know, that's all right. That's an option for you. But she did end up eating, and she got to talk to those people, and she just has a natural personality of connectability. And she became interested and saw them as people
right.
as they sat down. She
right.
saw the pans and everything else, but she saw them as people. Two out of the last 4 weekends, on a Friday night, I went to the armory. There's a homeless armory. Actually, it's an armory that they stay in on Friday, and every night they're there during the cold time, and it ends in March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And so at 4 o'clock, they open. At 5 o'clock, the homeless people get to come in. They feed them at 6 o'clock. And so I just went down there to make a connection to see, you know, what that was like. And what I want to start doing is going to the parks and just playing, you know, my guitar and singing and mm-hmm. play and pray with them. And so... and it's curious that one of the women that we went down and fed recognized me.
Nice.
Which
nice.
I didn't realize, you know, what kind of impact, because I'm standing at a door and it's tough. They give you plastic gloves and you're opening their bags to make sure they aren't bringing in any kind of weapons or paraphernalia or
yeah.
drugs. And,
yeah.
And so it's pretty invasive when they come in there. You think about
they're
that.
They're treated with such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
they have to. And so, yeah, they get that free bet. And. So, yeah, but how much of us are willing to go down and see how they live and who they are as people, you know? But, yeah, the despair is huge.
That, I was going to say, so we, That's kind of cool, because that was totally a God thing how that just started, because we were talking about, okay, so what real life stories can we give that really show the picture of despair very clearly? And I think beginning with the story of a homeless, that's great, and it's very, very real, very viable. But how many of us get in that pit of despair from being unemployed, for instance?
Sure.
Oh,
it's huge.
Yeah, there's people who have been unemployed for several months, and, you know, isn't it true, Steve, that men a lot of times find their self-esteem in their job, and then...
Well, I have a couple that recently came in, and he made a lot of money and had the house on the hill, and there was tension for 3 years of time. He got a job paying half the money he made, and there were a lot of issues between himself and his wife, and... She was very critical of him, and what kind of man are you? Or who knows what she said, but that's what he heard. And finally, 3 years later, and it's really a shame, their kids, beautiful kids, I saw the kids because the court now has ordered them to come to counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad was just sharing his story about how his wife treated him and how she felt towards him. He felt that towards himself anyway. And now, you know, they have to do this thing legally because they didn't know how to work it out. And it's a shame for all of us. Yes, money is huge.
Yeah, so that definitely...
Safety is huge.
And, you know, in the weeks to come, we're going to get into exactly where these roots come from. You know, they all have a genesis. You know, Steve just said something very interesting that, you know, he was already feeling bad about himself, and then she come along and she compounded it, so kind of hit the nail in the coffin, if you will.
Sure.
And so despair does begin in each side, you know, each one of us. You know, basically it's a self... thing that starts within, but there are reasons for it.
And life situational.
Yeah, it's definitely life situational. It's definitely when you begin to get the information, the flashlight, if you will, into the darkness that creates the despair, you begin to have some understanding and compassion for it. So, but being unemployed, you know, it's interesting. We might as well go ahead and talk about my stuff because, you know, it's all about me sometimes. But unemployed, you know, I said that keyword unemployed. You know, I'm so excited to be able to say, you know, I'm not in that pit of despair despite my husband taking that leap of faith. And
sure.
He's no longer employed, and he does not have a paycheck coming in, and I have no idea what we're going to do. And, you know, the old Kim, 2 or 3 years ago, would have been going right back into that pit of despair. That's old behavior. I don't go there anymore.
And be critical of him.
And very critical of him. And I have to say, I heard him tell some people in our home group the other night, she's actually doing really good. Like, he wouldn't say that to my face, of course. You know, he didn't.
Sure.
Okay, so now I'm being critical of him. Okay. So anyways, he didn't compliment me per se to me. He did compliment me to a person and said, she's really being very calm about it. And the reason that I am is definitely nothing of my own. It's because my hope is not in George.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love him, and I'm trying to be his cheerleader. I'm trying to, you know, just be a really real encourager for him. But my hope is in my first provider. But tell that to somebody who has a real warped perception of God, and they are not going to get it, which is the whole reason why I desired and yearned to write this curriculum, is to speak to those hurting people, because these roots are in the way, causing a clog, if you will, in the heart, so that the love of God is completely blocked. Not that it's not strong enough, but we block it out as life hits us. So, okay, so being unemployed, I have a situation in here in the Transform curriculum where this person says he also finds himself feeling overwhelmed and trapped when he takes a look around his house and sees everything that needs to be done. So in other words, if someone's in despair,
right,
they're inactive, right? They stay in their head.
Sure.
They don't do anything.
Kind of paralyzed.
Yeah, it's paralyzing. Okay, so there you go. So it can be very, very paralyzing. And, you know, and I know that there is all kinds of different relational situations, and it's funny because it seems to me that despair is always about relations, right?
Sure.
It's always caused from...
Well, there's a connection to it. Of course, at the moment, it's a connection to myself or my situation that I don't have any money. But if you're that man I talked about, then he also has to feel less than worthy to be the husband or the father.
Yeah.
And so it's tough not to take everything so personally and make it all about us. And so it is about us, but then it spills over. to these other relational connections we have.
Well, and then this person talks about he dwells on his unsteady walk with God and feels despair. So to me, this is a person whose best enemy is himself. Right?
Well, I think it's like friendships, you know, or in therapy, I'll have people who have significant histories of struggle, could be addiction, some kind of habit that they can't overcome. Mm-hmm. And I suggest to them, and this is the way it works, for instance, if you have a sponsor of a 12-step program, and I tell him, I want him to call me and tell me what his day is like, even when he's having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not calling me just to call me when you're having a good day, you definitely won't want to reach out when you're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that kind of thing with God. I think we think God only cares when, mm-hmm. or we only think about God when things are down.
Yeah.
And so we don't know how to have a relationship with him that he really does care unless I'm kind of desperate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worthy, actually. I mean, however worthy I could feel when I'm down, how would I feel worthy when I'm up because everything's fine? But I think we work that way as human beings. I don't think we're good at sharing openly much of ourselves. And then when we get down, we feel like nobody really wants to hear it.
Well, and I think that's interesting. It's, you know, I was just kind of getting a little mini download there. It's like we do have misperceptions about God, and because we weren't taught healthily how to love, I think it definitely affects how we view God loving us. And so we seem to think that the only time we can call upon him is when 911.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then we pull away because, okay, that's good. That fire's out. We back up.
Sure.
Oftentimes back off. And then when something else happens, it's 911. But God is more than a 911 operator. He wants to be our friend.
Well, we don't call. I don't think we connect. I don't think we feel the need of it or the vulnerability of it. We think we're bothering people.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah.
We get so down, we can't not bother someone. If we need to have money, we don't have money, we got to go make a call or contact somebody. But the bigger sadness is that Christ died for us when we weren't worthy of anything from him. But he wanted to make us know that he loved us, and he decided our worth, and he decided the value of it by giving his life. And then we don't come to him,
mm-hmm.
and which is a very sad kind of picture, that we think we're bothering God when we don't need to. We got to wait till we have like an 8, 9, or 10 crisis.
Yeah, and it grieves him. It makes him sad.
It does grieve him.
Yeah, it does make him sad. So here's another issue that people often will find themselves jumping into the pit of despair. This person takes medication to feel normal.
Huh.
And so he says, I feel even more hopeless as I think of the medication I have to take to keep me normal. What would you say about that?
Well, if we understood medication and we understood chemistry of our bodies, when we go through long-term crises, the body wasn't meant to. Defense mechanisms were meant for momentary light affliction. Okay, so what does that look like?
Momentary light affliction.
Yeah, I mean, if we have an earthquake or we get an F, it's not so light we think, but the emphasis is momentary. You'll get over this. Next week you're on to the next test. Next week there's no earthquake. And so the body, if you're raised in a family of significant crisis all the time, you overwhelm your system. And so it can't put out the chemicals it needs, the dopamine and the serotonin and all the things that manage and monitor and regulate our emotions. And so we need supplemental chemicals, supplemental chemistry until the crisis is over. Otherwise, if we go to try to face things and I'm already feeling anxiety all the time, then I think about going to face something, I get more anxiety.
So if we're under constant affliction, it's funny, you know, momentary light affliction or momentary affliction, that term is in the Bible.
Yes, it is.
That's what I thought.
Yes,
okay,
it
so
is.
We were not created to undergo constant war, period. Our bodies were not. And so when that happens,
right.
It's like God has built in a safety mechanism.
Sure.
Right?
Well, yeah, if you're going to go
shut down.
Well, you have to shut down because you're going to keep exposing yourself.
Mm.
To the situation. And so you think I should go out there and expose myself to more of the situation, and even thinking about that, I'm sure, creates more panic, creates more anxiety, and you're already feeling overwhelmed, so you obligate yourself based on guilt and norms and other obligations that you feel responsible for,
mm-hmm.
instead of nurturing yourself, instead of saying, I need to go see a doctor, I need momentarily, and I know that there are certain denominations that believe that somehow therapy is a tool of the devil.
yeah.
There's a book I read called Psychoheresy, you know, that gave all sorts of argumentation from Scripture that going to counseling or psychotherapy is sinful. And yet,
was that like taking stuff out of context?
Taking out of context, but, you know, we wouldn't say, well, what's wrong with you because your leg's broken, you should just suck it up. I mean, you'd go get a cast put on it.
Right.
And we wouldn't say, oh, and you're taking pain relievers for that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's emotional pain, you need to take a pain reliever for emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just sad because pastors have a lot of influence over people's beliefs. And so
yeah, they do.
Sin is based on the violation of a rule, but a lot of them are man's rules that mm-hmm. we feel like we're guilty of. And so we keep ourselves sick and we make other people feel like something's wrong with them if they're going. And so we have to live in this private kind of insanity, this private kind of despair. And so we think we're bothering people. Then they talk about, of course, if I need medication and I'm still despairing, I must not have enough faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a constant beatdown, you know, of misinterpretation of Scripture, misinterpretation of what the truth really is. And so if our chemistry isn't good enough, then we need to put something in there that supplements that chemistry until your body catches up.
And it's possible for the body to catch up. It's just the longer that you've buried it, the more, isn't it? It's like
well,
that path
you can't,
just been.
Well, you can't cope now. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you have no reserve. And mm-hmm. so when you're in therapy, you start talking about things. It makes it more anxious to talk about. I recommend a coping mechanism. Even like calling me, but already you feel unworthy, you're too anxious, and you think calling me is going to bother me. So, yeah, it's just a never-ending song that never ends versus, okay, let's try this chemistry. And that's what I tell people. If you think this little pill is going to harm you, try it for 2 to 3 weeks because that's about the time it takes to kind of normalize. And if you don't like that, you know, you can get your money back and go back to your misery. I mean, hey, if you want a return on your investment, great. If you think that's not going to help you, but the sad part is we don't even try that.
Well, and because most people, and there is some truth to be said, and people are comfortable in their misery because
sure.
they don't know any different. You know,
sure.
we were at Bryden's little 5-year birthday party this past weekend, and I had was talking with part of his grandma's family. I just love her side of the family, Michelle, and actually, Jordan, my stepdaughter's boyfriend, said to me, wow, because I don't think he'd ever really talked to the biological mom's parents before.
Uh-huh.
And he said, wow, they're really different. And I just said, you know, he started to say a bunch of things that he noticed. And I said, you know what? They don't know what it's like to be around a happy family.
Mm.
They've never really experienced that. All
wow.
they've ever experienced is chaos.
Huh.
And it was really cool because of that. Now, this is somebody who also months ago just really gave me a tongue lashing and a what for. And you know what? I pulled her outside before she left, and I said, I just want to tell you I'm so, so sorry for anything that I may have done. It gives you the interpretations that you have of me.
Mm.
And I just want to let you know that no matter what it looked like, George and I were only trying to do the right thing. And we may have done it in your eyes the wrong way, but we
right.
were doing the right thing. And I just want to tell you, I'm very, very sorry if it offended you. So,
good.
Yeah, becoming free from that is really, really cool. But there, you know, those are people also that they're not even cognizant of the despair that they live in because they've gone on in chaos for so many years.
Well, and the chaos can be external or internal, and the sadder part is if you're despairing and your mind is depressed and you're anxious, then you start adding all sorts of mental and emotional management tools to try to figure out what's going on around you, and that can create even more chaos for yourself and chaos for other people as well, especially if you're an adult and you have kids and they can't explain why you're this upset. Yes, you're unemployed. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of behaviors and attitudes that you exhibit. And, of course, not only are you not helping yourself by seeking help, you're also not helping your children.
So what is it that you, I mean, what would you say, Steve? I mean, we've only touched on a few things. You know, there's other situations like, you know, terrible breakups that, you know, kind of plunge people into the
sure.
pit of despair. But I would be willing to say that a terrible breakup is not the actual cause. Because it goes back even further. Because in my opinion, if you give somebody that kind of emotional power over you, then isn't there a hint of it in the, to begin with?
Well,
Okay, how do you, this is a good question. Okay, answer my question, and I want to answer this question in the chat room.
Well, there's no doubt that we are already wired or pre-wired. Let's say that there was a breakup, but what that says to me is there was a lot of stuff before mm-hmm. the breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Why were you continuing to expose yourself to something
right.
that wasn't working in the first place? Why were you wanting to put up with all sorts of abuse, including now that this person abandons you? And what we can't see, which is really tough, is my contribution to my own abandonment, my contribution
yeah, exactly.
to my own ending that I'm feeling a victim of, but I had something to do with that.
Well, and I think that that's key, and we're going to get into that even deeper as we get into these roots. We will definitely delve into that, but that's the key that hopefully we'll be able to address, because even myself being in ministry and now doing these trench classes, it baffles me that people are getting these powerful tools and these truths, and yet many still are, they're just like, hello, nobody's.
Well, that's why there's logic,
stuff.
There's emotion
yeah.
with it, and there's intelligence. And so my emotional intelligence keeps me stuck, even though it's the greatest information. I really don't see how I apply that, or I think maybe I'm already doing some of the things.
That's the emotional intelligence.
The emotional intelligence. Well, the emotional intelligence.
No, that's the logical intelligence.
That's the logical intelligence,
yeah.
yes.
And the emotional intelligence
is being able to see intelligently, not reactively,
right.
how I come across, how you come across. I mean, it's sort of the end, hopefully, of the transform process or how we love process.
That's that ego thing that...
Yes, that observing ego.
Observing ego.
That
yeah.
I can see what I do, I can see the effect it has on you.
Okay, so let's talk about this question. She says, how do you keep from being drawn into despair by someone else who causes the chaos? And I know this person that's in the chat room right now, and every time her ex causes chaos, it's really hard for her. It's difficult. What is it that she can do to not let his chaos cause her despair? Does that make sense?
Well, first of all, people attract or create an emotional immaturity level. What does that mean? Well, people in chaos or despair are used to chaos and despair. And if one of the two of the people come into my office, and ideally I try to get them both in as soon as possible, but let's say that that chaos then creates for the person in front of me, let's say their mate, very chaotic, very controlling.
But this is an ex. Let's do her situation. This is an ex-husband, and they've got a daughter.
Right.
And so now this is kind of like trespassing all the time. So,
well, whether it's ex or not, the same answer comes down to you have to make a choice, and it would be helpful if you're coached, if you will, or in counseling or someone that you're working with, so there's some accountability to the change you're going to choose to make.
Yes.
And so you can announce to this person what you're going to choose not to do the next time, or you can just choose not to do it the next time. And so now keep in mind the whole thermostatic level issue is they're used to you folding. They're used to you giving in.
Or reacting.
Or the way you behave. If you start changing that in any way, that's going to take, I start at 70 degrees, all of a sudden you change, that goes to 75. They're not comfortable with 75. They're going to make it to 80, making you more uncomfortable with your change. So and what you have to do, and I call it the broken record technique and the assertive position. In the assertive position, I'm telling you what I'm going to stop doing or I'm going to start doing, and it's not trying to change you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only going to change me. And so in the broken record technique, let's say that the controlling, chaotic, creating person is going to tell you after you set them, I'll be there Friday night. I'll be there Friday night to pick up my child at 3:00 Friday afternoon. They start going all around the block, make you feel guilty or threatening you. You say again, by the way, thank you for sharing, I'll be there at 3:00 Friday afternoon. Well, I'm going to call the police and I'm going to tell them, okay, and I'm going to be there, by the way, Friday afternoon at 3:00.
Broken record.
Broken record. You need to decide what you're going to do, and you need to have someone you're accountable to and then follow up with.
And yes, let me validate you in that it definitely makes life more challenging, but also I believe that you can get so much growth out of this. So try the broken record thing. We've just been given this 60-second, now 40-second warning that we have to cut off. So that does conclude despair, and we will move on to rage. But keep in mind, we'll be coming back and getting into these very deeply. This is just an overview of each.
And by the way, come back on the air next week, ask that same question, and we'll make it more clear.
Yes. Reach out. Make it a great day.
Bye-bye.